I just think that it's...
We're on.
Yeah, that's right.
Mark Lang, welcome to the Track Times. This is Blaine. How
are
you doing?
Good, man. Are you actually going to put this up, are you, on the site?
Or is
this
just we have
a reference point?
On Tag, which is a sort of a media section, more so relating to gigs and...
Right.
It's a gig guide. It started out as a gig guide, small magazine in the 80s.
Yeah.
And or 70s, I think. And it was the go-to...
Right.
Little tiny magazine that could fit in your back pocket.
Yeah, right.
And so now it's, of course, the age has changed and we're all digital.
So you put up MP3s and general shenanigans.
And we have a radio
station. How cool is that?
So we just upload the images or the...
bit of the audio. From
the audios, and then I attach the images to a written document, which is separate to the thing. But anyway,
cool,
so
man.
Here we go. So well done.
Thank you.
Good on you. How long have you been playing the guitar? Or did you start with the guitar, or was it...
I did start with the guitar. I started when I was a kid. The weird thing about it, and this is, I guess, the whole thing about being at the National, is that my grandmother actually started me off songwriting, and I was in grade two, and she... I used to just wander around singing little songs. It was very strange, you know. I don't know, I used to do that. I'd sing little songs up, and then what she would do was... what she would do is she said to me, oh, you know, you should write this down one day. And I was like, what? And so she didn't know music extremely well herself. She knew a bit on the piano. And I remember going to her, she used to live in St Kilda around the corner from here, from one of these old 80s high-rise apartments. So it was probably more like a 70s apartment, a 70s, 80s apartment, and it overlooked the water. It was magical.
Oh,
but
amazing.
But anyway, she first put the notes down, and she worked out the notes on the piano, and then she wrote the lyric up. And I remember just like being so overwhelmed by this experience, where some little idea that I'd had as a child really was there on the paper, and I just was so excited. I remember going to school, and the music teacher, I showed it to her, and like, this is something I've written, you know, this kind of... So it sort of really, I guess, began around there, because I couldn't play an instrument at that point. But then not too long after that, I think that excitement of doing that with my grandmother, I started getting some guitar lessons, which I don't think I had the patience or whatever to kind of sit there trying to do classical positions. But my older cousin actually showed me a couple of chords, and my mum did as well, could play the guitar. And strangely, I didn't go around playing other people's. I wasn't trying to learn other people's songs, but they'd show me a couple of chords and I'd string them together, and then I'd keep writing new songs. So it's kind of like my relationship with the guitar has really always been about songwriting. It's never been about virtuosity on the guitar. Like, I've gotten better at the guitar over the years, but it's been more that I've tried to stretch my songwriting, and so then that's led to me improving my guitar skills. But I never see myself as a guitarist. I see myself as more as a songwriter, and the guitar is like a tool to do that.
It's I've got a friend who's a clairaudient tarot reader. I know this may be a little... I'll get back to the
tangent,
point eventually.
Yeah.
But like, sometimes when I hear an air conditioning in a room, I hear a symphony going with the sound.
Oh, for sure.
And it's like,
yeah,
where the hell does that creativity... Where does it come from, and why can we hear it? And so I was actually did a Google, as we can, and typed in clairaudient to see what it meant.
Yeah.
And so, because, you know, I was a classical pianist growing up, so from 7 till 14. And,
right.
And, you know, I stopped, took up sport. Yeah. But anyway, so, but the creativity part just has kept driving through, and it really... It's something from the self anyway, and only we can hear it.
It's interesting you should say that, because my wife's a choreographer, contemporary dance choreographer, and she's done her PhD and made lots of great, amazing contemporary dance works. And when Skipping Girl started, around that time, I was very heavily into making soundscapes for contemporary dance works. And so my sort of thing, or what I was sort of known for, was taking everyday objects like hums from refrigerators or things or whatever, and then turning
squeaky
them into
doors.
Squeaky doors, like what we're getting right now. There was a piece of Squeaky Doors where you take these kind of environment sounds and then actually shift and pull and stretch them, and Yeah, and make them into kind of environments, sonic environments that from the everyday, but then by cutting them up and mucking around with them and pitch shifting and turning things, they then became musical things. But you know, the noises even around us, like there's one that we did where I started recording and the front door at our old house used to jingle as it would open and close from the bell that was a bit lost inside it. And then that sort of turned into this whole scape. And it was interesting because I went back to some old recordings from that period of time and it just took me straight back to that house, you know? Yeah. So well, music is in everything, really.
It is. Like in Alzheimer's, patients respond well to piano playing from their childhood and these sort of experiments.
Yeah.
And, you know, it brings its joy ultimately, doesn't it? So.
Oh, and on the last Skipping of Inga record, we recorded that down the coast where I now live in a smaller coastal town, and we did a lot of it in old abandoned halls and things like that where we record the vocals and stuff like that, and the natural bleed from the outside of the water and the ocean and the wind banging up against the wall, it's not like you don't really hear it on all the tracks, but it just sort of sets this environment where often with recordings it's done in a sterile, clean environment.
Yeah.
And I'm a really, pretty much, I think it's probably from this soundscape background, I've always loved recording in houses or environments that aren't traditionally recording spaces, because the environment sort of finds its way into the recording. Like a record is that. It's like a record of time or an idea of time, and actually being in a space and allowing those things to kind of happen around it, actually, I know, it makes you feel like you're in the room with the artist.
Yeah, like an environmental portrait of music.
For sure, example. Absolutely, yeah. So because the last record was so much about the area that I grew, where I spent, was living and life down the coast, and also transitioning through this kind of cancer period that my wife was going through, it just actually having this... having the space or the environment actually bleed into the mics, even the birds, everything, it just kind of brought a bit of authenticity to it or something. I don't know. Rambling on.
I'm thinking of a musician who spent a lot of time in New Guinea, you know, Australian iconic musician.
David Bridie.
Dave, thank you.
Again, it's weird that you should say that, because David Bridie, I've always loved his music and his band, My Friend the Chocolate Cake. And it's amazing to be coming back, because I've been away in America and I've come home, and then to be coming and launching this solo thing at the National Theatre is very special, because A, my grandmother lived around the corner. I spent so much time around here and I saw so many influential gigs here. And one of those was My Friend the Chocolate Cake, and they did a live recording at the National Theatre, and one of the songs that is on that album, my wife walked down the aisle to. So there you go.
Well, hopefully you're at the end of it.
That's it. So there you go. So the National Theatre just seems to keep popping itself back up again in some weird way.
Lovely. Well, you know, the creative spirits are probably assisting everyone who's in here.
Yeah. In a positive
way, we hope.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess that comes from us, really, doesn't it?
Well, it's a beautiful place. It's got kind of charm and character, and you know that it's had this deep history, that so many other things have happened here before, so many creative things have happened. And I always find that when you walk on the stage in different environments, you really feel like you have this kind of feeling of the things that have gone before it, you know?
Yeah.
Before
a concert, do you arrive before everyone else does and just hop out on stage and get a feel of the place before?
Yeah, of course, yeah. So you sort of, traditionally you'll be in the room and you'll do your sound checks and all those kind of things, and that kind of gives you a bit of an orientation to the space. And I guess the bigger theatres, when you do those shows, you have a bit more time, because it's more of a setup than, say, a pub or something like that. But
do you picture the audience naked or anything? Like public, you know, some public speakers?
It's funny, because I was listening to John Fain as I was coming in here. I was having the conversation hour, and one of the guests was talking about what she does before she walks on stage, is she pauses for a moment when she's at the microphone and she thinks of loving the audience.
Hmm.
And she said, the action of doing that, even just for a small second, helps her to kind of feel like she's not in a room of hostility, but like in a room of, you know, like that it's a reciprocal thing. Because I think that's where nerves actually come from, you know, that moment where you come out to the front and you're not sure what the reaction's going to be like, and you kind of, you can, it can choke you a little bit. And I really I really like that idea about doing that. Jeff Tweedy from Wilco's got this thing where he says he came to this point where he realized that music, like performing, wasn't about him. It was really about the audience. It was about giving back to them and engaging with those people and actually sort of sharing. And he said once he took it off himself, he stopped worrying about himself as being the center of it.
Yep.
That actually was the liberating thing for him. And
and the music's the medium.
Yeah, and I think
he's the conduit.
Yeah, and I think I think that particularly the last Skipping Girl record was so personal about everything that had been going on with my wife was sort of going through cancer and came out the other side of it, that it was kind of both a processing thing but also a giving to other people to let them know, to have a reflection for them to understand what might be going for them through for themselves, whether it's that or whether it's, well, I mean, we're all trans in life, we all kind of go through these different stages where we have challenges. So it someone passes away or we have a moment where we have no reference point to it, and that's where art can be a great thing at helping us to kind of distill an idea or distill a feeling or reflect a feeling to kind of help our way through it. So
yeah, my mother lost a child before me, and she took up painting, oil painting, when I was born, and she's still painting, and she paints from her mind, and so it's quite interesting what she does, a lot of colour and really great shapes.
Yep.
And where am I going with that? I'm thinking that nerves, that's where I was going.
Yeah.
The nerve thing and the anxiety effect is the way I've dealt with that in my life is to observe it coming to the surface of the skin, and knowing that it's only me who's going through that, because and no one else probably notices unless, you know, I start twitching
which
I don't do often. But
well, the other thing too is I think the truth of it is that everybody, I've got this line where I say everyone's struggling with something, you know, like you scratch the surface and everyone's kind of working through something. It's just that some people are better at hiding it or dealing with it or whatever, or they present it. Some people are very confident in person, are struggling a lot, you know, in their own lives or whatever. And it's, I think when you understand that you're not on your own as you're going through, or that we all have frailties, that can be quite liberating to kind of understand, well, we're part of this thing. And that's, again, why artists that really, I guess, open themselves up and are truthful about an idea or a feeling or something that they're travelling through, that can be very meaningful in many, many ways, you know.
I sometimes listen to a woman called Pema Chodron, who's a Buddhist monk, Canadian, and she has this, she talks about one of her Rinpoche teachers, I can't remember which one it was, but he was saying that this stuff that we call anxiety or stress or stuff is actually really juicy, and we should just envelop, be a part of it, because it's so juicy and so you can almost, it's tactile.
Yep.
Or we imagine that it's tactile because it does reflect in our body and on our skin and you know, in various parts.
Yeah.
I usually find it on the surface of the eyeball, it's quite dominant there.
Yeah, right. That's
and then
interesting.
I can take my tiredness to that point, and then as soon as I recognise it, it disappears.
That's interesting, isn't it?
So it's really weird.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, now.
So standing up on the stage and having a momentary observation of nerves is knowing that, okay, I'm here. Fucking let's just play.
Yeah.
Oh, I have to go.
Yeah. And being and just being and kind of giving yourself to the moment. I think that's because, I mean, I guess when you play a lot, you know, sometimes you can easily be distracted or be thinking about the 10 other things you got going on in your moment. And I find that the most
Yeah.
testing something.
Yeah. We've got a thumper in the room.
Yeah, that's it. He's rocking it out.
Loose floorboards. That's what I usually say if I've got a bit of wind.
At least that's a good one. Yeah, I don't know what I was going to say, but yeah. Oh, distraction, being distracted on stage. I think, like, artists when they're really present in a moment, like I remember this one gig particularly where I really remember beforehand really trying to be super, super conscious about where I was, and I was able to really retain the focus the entire way through, and people who saw that gig said that was like at this whole other level. And I think that's the thing about being really present in the material itself and not rolling through it, you know. Yeah, present in the moment and the material and really thinking about it. Those powerful artists that are really, really overwhelming, I reckon, are in that, are able to kind of tap into that.
Yeah, it's almost lost, but it's not. It's found, really, isn't it? I watched a video of yours the other day, and you seemed very there when you were playing the guitar in that single room. There was a little light shining from the left-hand side, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And you were just you and a mic and the guitar.
Yeah, that's right. That's actually in a little...
We've got a thumper in the room still.
That's all right.
Anyway.
That's actually in a little fishing shed that's down in where I live. It used to be out on the edge of a pier. And this guy would paint the walls with all the boats that would come in and out of the up through the heads.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it's an amazing little space actually. And so I wanted to record something in there. So yeah, it's still a live song in there.
So how was the Nashville, Tennessee?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I've been there a lot over the last 8 years since the band. Since we started making music, we kind of mixed our first album there, and I've sort of kind of gone back every couple of years. I'm trying to think of how many times I've been there. Maybe 6 or 7 times now.
A lot.
And a lot. Last time I was there, I was only there for a couple of days because I was really busy touring around doing shows and doing different things. And so I just kind of popped into Nashville just for the last couple of days of my trip. And it was weird because I was catching up with all these people that I know. I was like, it's so weird because normally when I'm in Nashville, I'm there for like 7 days or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. So I'm generally for a block of time working on something. And I was just thinking that, you know, you can somewhere a completely other side of the world, you know, that you don't get to go to all the time, and then you arrive and you know exactly where to go and have a coffee and who to catch up with, and
it's familiarity.
It's the thing about this life of being an artist and traveling is that you know, it's not always a very affluent way of living your life being an artist. It's definitely a decision to not necessarily have that in your life. But
how do you cope when you? I know you're only away for little bursts, but touring on the road. How do you? It's like it's super draining, or it can be for some. And it's exhilarating for others. How do you deal with the travelling around when you're touring?
Yeah, it's you know, traditionally with Skipping Girl, we would sort of do a lot of kind of weekend touring, so we'd leave on a Thursday night or something like that and fly out and then do Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday come home. So we'd sort of be coming in and out quite a bit. That was sort of, you know, families and different things like that. I really look forward to it. Because the way I see touring is that I'm often catching up with friends or people that have travelled with us in making work for however long. And so when I go to Canberra or you go to Brisbane or Sydney or wherever, it's kind of you're going to these places, but you're sort of going to catch up with people. And we've traditionally stayed with people, you know, being down the indie path, we kind of had to keep things pretty on the, you know, just keep it on the super cash down front. Being lean, that's right. But and in the action of doing that, it's made it more meaningful because we've got friends in lots of different places that we visit. And I'm going to Brisbane, I'm thinking I'm catching up with my friend Scott or my friend Steve or whatever, and so he's staying with them with their families. And so it's kind of, No, it's
more personal.
Yeah, you're working. Yeah. You are working, and it can definitely be tiring and all the rest of it. And at the end of like a long tour, you know, it's definitely like that. But the last few years, I had to take a bit of time off when Sheridan was unwell. But
yeah,
this trip to America
glad
was
quite. She's
yeah,
well.
She's yeah. Thank you. This last trip to America, I was there. Solo starting this journey into doing some more solo work, and I was away for 3.5-4 weeks, and that was like a long stretch for me, traditionally, you know, only being sort of a week or whatever. And yeah, so that was a challenge because I've got a little guy, and you know.
Cool.
But it was definitely a wonderful experience for sure. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Right. America's just such a different place, you know, so
yeah. Can you do can we do something a little derogatory? Can you do a Tennessee accent? Or if you had an influential musician from Nashville,
yeah.
What would you
yeah.
I don't know.
Oh,
you know,
well, one guy said to me.
You could sing it as well, of course.
Well, one guy, we landed in LA, and I remember we were catching the train into the center for some reason, and it was cheaper, and I was with my manager at the time, and we were catching the train. This guy came riding up to me on this lowrider BMX. And it was sort of a sketchy kind of part of town. And he's riding up to me, and he just looks at me, and he goes, "Hey, you're not from around here, are you?" And I said, "Oh yeah." And he goes, "Are you guys Australian?" And I said, "Oh, how did you know?" You know, because I hadn't said anything at that point. And he goes, "Oh, you got blue eyes, blonde hair, and you smell like the great outdoors."
Whoa.
And I was like, "Wow, there you go." Maybe I said, "I've been on a flight for 20 hours, maybe it's probably more about that than
so
than
a sensitive dude on a low-rise BMX in a dodgy part of LA. Wow,
he's picking
a picture
it.
In itself.
Oh yeah,
no,
well, I started writing a song about him like yesterday, actually, thinking about it. So
awesome.
Yeah, but there's lots of interesting turns of phrases that they have. So
yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we probably should wind it. Otherwise, we'll go on all afternoon. And,
yeah, that's
all
right. But I will just jump in here and just talk about the actual show itself.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I knew I meant to ask that one.
Yeah, yeah. No. Well, we've been rambling so much. But basically, what it is...
the National Theatre
in
Melbourne.
We're at the National Theatre in Melbourne, and secured on June the 3rd. And what the whole premise around this thing is that my deep love of the ocean, basically, and... I lived down the coast, and I spent much of my life in St Kilda hanging out with my grandparents. And so basically I'm weaving a bunch of stories of that period of time of my life with my grandparents, and also the water and the ocean where I live now, around this kind of this wider idea of all the different many moods of the oceans and how it reflects our lives and the different things we transfer through. And there's an amazing set design from this guy called Graham Altman, who's kind of created a whole bunch of stuff for that. And there's animation, big projected animation is going to be happening. And
all right.
With a guy,
an animator
called Lee Ryan, they're good friends of mine. And the idea is to kind of create this kind of immersive feeling, so you kind of come into the National. From the moment you step in, there'll be sound wrapping around it, and they'll have projections, and well, like someone hammering in the background here now, but there'll be just kind of, you'll be sort of, the idea is to try and be taken away into another world or another little experience for the period of time that the
Beautiful.
Show goes on.
Yeah, and the show must go on.
It'll be really good. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Oh, thank you very much, Mike.
No worries. Yeah. Very good.
This is Blaine from the Toorak Times signing off.
Right on. Thanks.
Another lovely autumn day in Melbourne.
Thank you.
Where we had 7-meter waves down the west coast this week, apparently.
Yep.
Don't think I'd like to see that.
Yes, well, that's where I am down the west coast.
All right, I've got to work out how to switch this. Here we go. Bye-bye.